You are listening to the Experience Points podcast for the week of May 29th, 2019, and they keep cranking out accessories, we keep buying them.
Welcome back to the Experience Points podcast. I'm George Albor.
My name is Scott Juster.
We're a serious but not humorous conversation about video games. Man, next gen is here, Scott.
It's here. Take that, Sony and Microsoft. You got scooped.
We are talking about the hottest new console on the market, the Playdate.
The Play dot date.
Is it? Oh, it is dot date. Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
A strong also, URL.
We should say we missed last week. My bad. Yeah. We're back this week, though.
So, we are back. We're firing on all cylinders. We've gone so far that we are eschewing color screens.
Oh,
getting back to our roots.
Also, I feel like I owe this to listeners because we did a podcast about this. I was gonna say I haven't talked to you about this yet because I wanted a small segue before we get into the meat of today's topic, which is an opportunity for me to say I saw Detective Pikachu. In theaters.
Oh, shit. Scott. Oh, man. And fucking clear the docket. I need to hear about this.
I gotta say, not that bad.
Okay,
and I don't think most people will say that, but here's what I'll say.
Wait, is it getting reviewed poorly? Is it not being received
well? I mean, I've heard a lot of mixed things. Like, it's weird and nonsensical, and there's, like, weird things that, like... I mean, like, hey, here's the thing, right? You're opening up a can of worms when you're like, Mewtwo's in this universe, and also here's how like the Pokemon world works. Like, there are problems with the Pokemon universe that have existed for many, many, many years that people are now forced to confront in the film Detective Pikachu. What I will say though is that it's not that bad, and I think it adheres to the spirit of the Pokemon franchise.
I mean, it seemed like it. I mean, I am glad that is your review of it. Was the theater full?
It was. There was quite a few kids. Yeah.
Still kids going to see it after still like kids. All these, because it came out a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I saw it on a Tuesday at like 2 p.m, so I feel like that is just the general audience that you get at that time of day.
Where it's just like the parents are like, fuck, how do I get out of the house for a few hours? Okay, fuck it, we're going to see that Pikachu movie.
I mean, there were kids in there that clearly liked Pokemon, you know, that were jazzed about Pikachu and stuff, so... I don't know. I mean, I feel like maybe I'm getting soft in my old age because I also came to the defense of Sonic, which, by the way, since our conversation has been delayed.
Did you see that?
Yeah, delayed till 2020.
Yeah, February.
This is what we've asked for. This is the future where we fucking complain about anything on the internet and it gets delayed instead of like appreciating artistic license. The movie's not going to be good no matter what.
Why? I know. And now they're going to ruin some people's lives for the next, you know, year, more three quarters of a year, having to redo every single CG scene in that stupid movie.
There are like 5 animation houses that are crunching through February at least of next year. So
through when does it come out? Like February 16th, like they will be crunching up and through February 15th at 11:59 p.m.
I mean, at what point are they gonna animate a photorealistic Sonic and go, we've done it? This is it. This is the Sonic that we've dreamed about. Like, that's not a thing that's gonna happen. Can we just get over it? God,
I imagine an Arrested Development style, George Bush style mission accomplished banner in front of like
they unveil like a photorealistic Sonic and go, that's what I imagine he'd be like. Perfect. Oh my God. We're not here to talk about Sonic or Pokemon. No. Although this object is yellow and does look like it would fit for a Pikachu thing.
It is yellow and cute.
It is yellow and cute. We're talking about Playdate. So, Scott, tell our listeners, what is Playdate?
Playdate is a forthcoming handheld console system by the software development house Panic.
Yes.
And you Mac nerds will know that Panic has been a long-time Mac software developer. And they recently, within the last few years, they published Firewatch before Camposanto was part of Valve. And they are publishing the forthcoming untitled Goose game.
Ooh,
which
so excited for that.
I imagine it will take its place among the the pantheon of fumble core games like Goat Simulator and Octodad and, yep. and all of those types of, it looks amazing. But anyway, so they're starting to branch out into games, and then out of nowhere they release this weird little console.
Yep. It has, most importantly, it's got, you know, it's got a D-pad, it's got a B and an A button, it's got a tiny yep. little screen, but it has a crank.
It has a crank. Like it reminds me, so I was actually disappointed to know that you cannot actually power it with the crank. I thought it would be cool if it was like one of those like hand radios that you can power with a crank.
Yeah. Like, well, I didn't bring this this radio into the shelter, but I bought a Playdate. Yeah, the crank is actually used, I mean, I assume it's used in most, if not all, of the games, because it's a new input device.
I was, they have a fairly, funny and, dank Twitter account associated with their console. And so I was reading through some of the responses, and they were saying that, the crank is up to whoever wants to use it. Some games will use it a lot, and some games will, not use it very much at all. Right. And so it's just like another... It's just a weird input device that is exclusive to that console.
Yeah, I mean, basically, Gen 8's going to be a bop it, right? Like, I mean, genuinely, why a crank? Like, would you not... in a weird way, I almost feel like a bop it, like a twist it thing would... Right. I mean, I don't know. Like, it seems arbitrary. The crank seems arbitrary, considering how many, knobs one could put on a piece of hardware.
How many various strange input devices. I mean, yeah, it's just... there's something to be said for the aesthetics of it. Like, it makes it seem even more like weird and toy-like, which I think they're leaning into.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's definitely true. And it's shaped like that, right? Like, it's a tiny little square handheld. I mean, it's very small. If anything, it looks most like, I don't know, a Nintendo DS.
It kind of looks like one of the late model Game Boy type of, like almost like half of a Game Boy Advance SP, like the clamshell version,
Yes.
Looks like you cut that in half and then that's basically what this thing is. Also, black and white screen.
Yep, black and white screen. Which, I mean, I'm a fan of, because that means that you're really limited on the mechanics, right? Like, it better be good.
Well, and also just the art style. I mean, they talk up their screen about, it kind of reminds me of what a black and white Kindle screen looks like. Like, yes. Just, looking at some of the pictures, which as weird as it is to say, actually is a very nice screen. You know, there is something aesthetically pleasing about that. But it's like every part of this thing is very odd.
I enjoy leaning into the idea that what you're buying is a toy, right? Because the core conceit of this is not that, oh, there's going to be an online marketplace and you'll be able to download all of these games. Like, the main idea is that when you buy this piece of hardware, it will have all of the games on it, and those games will unlock, I guess, according to, I don't know if you have to download an update, but they will unlock over time.
Yeah.
And the assortment of games that you get is already pre-locked in, and once you're done with that, you're done with that. Like, that is a device meant to be, to use to be playing those specific games.
Right, right.
And really, it's about who they're bringing on board, right? Like, the game designers are no one to laugh at, right? Like, they have, the game is called Krankin's Time Travel Adventure from Kaita Takahashi, the guy behind Katamari Damacy. Like, what? That's so cool.
I mean, it's almost, we'll talk about the price in a moment, but just, if you were to tell me that Kaita Takahashi, Zach Gage, Bennett Foddy were like making some new games, and it's like, okay, sign me up. Like, where am I going to play this? Like, it doesn't matter. I'll pay for it,
And not just that. I think genuinely, if Bennett Foddy was like, hey, I have one game and you can only play it on this thing, I would seriously consider buying it.
I mean, and if you think about, especially Bennett Foddy, of course he's going to make a game that has a crank attached to it.
Hell yes. I mean, I'm shocked he hasn't made a game with a crank attached to it yet. I mean, if anything, I would think, I hope it's a fishing game. There better be at least one fishing game.
I wonder, what they should do is, because it sounds like they're positioning this in terms of, like you said, in terms of seasons, where it's like the first season of games is going to be a new game every week. I think they said for 12 weeks or something like that.
Yep.
And I'm sure they'll move to a subscription model after that, but it would be funny if they held back the fishing game as like, this is we had to work on this for multiple seasons.
The fishing game will come. I mean, just wait for it.
Yeah, I mean, we can't just throw out a fishing game there. This has to be the ultimate fishing game.
It's going to have to wait for Gen 2 when they have motion control, so you can flick the unit, you know, and it'll get the, like, fly fishing pro.
Gen 2 will actually have a lure on it that you have to...
I mean, what it should be is, like, Frog Fractions 3.
Oh, my God. Can you... Twinbeard would totally make a game for this.
Hell yeah, he would.
I would actually... Okay, now that I think about that, I would actually be surprised if... there is not a Twinbeard game on this at some point.
Yes, for sure. Hmm. Going back a little bit to the creation of this device, Mr. Businessman question.
Oh, boy.
I don't understand how you go, like, just genuinely, how do you go from a company that makes Mac software to video game publisher to hardware manufacturer? You're just a weird dude with money? Like, you're just the CEO that's like, I got fucking cash.
Well, my understanding is that Panic is a privately held company.
Mm-hmm.
And when you're a privately held company, as long as you're solid, then you just have so much freedom. You know, like you don't have to worry about pleasing the board or you know, pleasing the shareholders,
right,
or just like kind of regressing towards whatever the safest short-term bet is. Like, you could just do weird stuff, you know, like as long as there's enough money to keep paying the bills and keep, you know, growing at the rate you need to grow, it doesn't really matter because the public doesn't own you. And right. So you can do whatever you want, you know. Man,
and Firewatch just made that much. I liked Firewatch, but hot damn.
I mean, I think the what is powering them is largely their software. You know, Transmit is a very well-known and well-liked FTP application. Coda is a very well-known and well-liked
software. Dude, I have no idea what the fuck you're talking about. I don't know anyone in my life who uses a Mac.
Well, you need to hang out with different types of people because...
Do I?
I mean, it's... I will say... I don't know. I mean, like... one thing is I've used Macs and PCs for a long time now. Like I started using a Mac, I don't know, in college at some point regularly. Sure. And even before college, like I used Macs in school a lot, but, you know, there's a very dedicated and hardcore group of Mac enthusiasts. And especially back in the old days when like software was not that interoperable, so there were very specific pieces of software for Mac that
were
only for Mac and that you had to buy because that was the only way to do it, because it was a smaller pool of developers and a smaller pool of people they were developing for, so you just got to know these programs a little bit better. And so like if you were doing web development, you were probably using Coda from Panic, or if you had to do anything with FTP, you were probably using Transmit or CyberDuck or any of those other like weird old Mac programs.
Right.
But anyway, yeah, I mean, so I would imagine that's probably where they make most of their money. And then I think that I'm sure Firewatch did well for them, and I'm sure Untitled Goose Game is going to do well for them. So it's they just have money to play with, you know?
Yeah. So speaking of money, this console, if you want to call it that, will cost you $150.
Yeah. What do you think about that? Is that cheap or expensive?
I mean, you know me, dude. Like, I spend an unnecessary amount of money on bullshit I don't need. So, like, for me, like, I spent
$150 on my latte this morning.
I mean, like, yo, look, I play Magic cards. You know what I mean? That shit isn't cheap. You know, I pay a lot of money for cardboard. So, I mean, I will probably pay this. It's difficult for me to understand, like, this is not a competitive device, right? Like, this is a very niche. I was in Seattle recently on vacation, and I spent, like, a dumb amount of money buying, like, vinyl soundtracks to, like, movies and video games, right? Completely unnecessary purchase, right? But that is...
Sparks joy, though.
It does spark joy. Thank you, Marie Kondo. But the point is, like, that is, what is it? It's called it's a boutique purchase. Right?
Mm-hmm.
This is a boutique piece of hardware. If you are like a kid that's into video games, of course you're not going to buy this. Like, save up, buy a Nintendo Switch, fucking open a whole new world of video games that you can play, right? But if what you want to do is like support very niche indie games, then I don't know, it seems fair. Like, it seems kind of a cool thing to have, you know? Like, certainly I think if I were pricing this, I don't know how much it costs to build it, but if I were pricing this, that's probably the highest I would be willing to go and still think that people would actually buy it.
Well, and I will say that, and they even mentioned this in their various, you know, Twitter responses to people, that it hardware is just super expensive, and it's tough because it gets more efficient as you make more, but it's really hard to get started up. And so, like, unless you're Nintendo, it's extremely cost prohibitive to make anything hardware. Like, there's so many Kickstarters out there that are like, we need to raise $1 million just to, like, fund our prototype, and then maybe we'll be able to get it off of the, you know, the factory line and, you know, specifically make it, like, not even get it on shelves. And so it seems like 150 is actually a realistic thing for them to not completely take a bath on this.
Yeah.
Which is interesting to expose to people, you know, because we think about things. We think about, like, if you think about a Nintendo Switch, which is, how much is a Switch? Like 250 or something like that?
250, 300, yeah.
So for $100 or so more, you're getting a wildly more intricate and technically advanced machine.
Yes.
And you got to realize that that's economies of scale at work. You know, like there's no logical reason why a Nintendo Switch is only incrementally cheaper than this tiny little thing, except that Nintendo can make millions of them and drive the cost down.
Right. It's why whenever you think about buying your own custom t-shirt, it's like a huge hullabaloo.
Right, exactly. It's like, well, I could buy a $20 t-shirt at Target, or I can spend $300 getting this specifically silkscreened or whatever.
Or I can buy 600 t-shirts for $15 each, and all of them will say, like, John's birthday party 2019, you know?
Thanks, Costco.
Happy birthday, John.
Yeah, so I agree, and if you break it down by, you know, would you pay $5 for each of these indie games? All of a sudden, you know, 5 times 12, you know, for each of these games is like, oh, okay, like we're reaching the point where, if you think about the games, the hardware is only an incremental part of that cost.
Yeah, how many units do you think they're making?
I don't know. They're trying to drum up, they're trying to stir people up on their website, saying that it's going to be limited. Like, they're going to have a hard time fulfilling all orders.
I mean, kind of like the Nintendo Switch. Oh!
I mean, what it really reminds me of is the fucking NES Classic.
Yes, that's very true, yeah.
And look what Nintendo did to us there, where they're like, you better buy it now, this might never come back. And then, like, they brought it back every year.
Well, I mean, this is a case where it's probably true, right? Like, I don't think demand for this is going to be insanely high, you know?
That is true. I mean, think about the audience, too. Like, I'm interested in that, where, in a weird way, I think this is kind of a cool thing for kids, but I don't think every game will be kid-friendly, you know, yes. In terms of, you know, a Bennett Foddy game is not exactly child friendly, even though there's nothing, like, thematically wrong with it.
You don't think Getting Over It is perfect for the 6-year-old in your life who wants to hear Ben Affati give philosophical ramblings about difficulty in video games?
Yeah, it's like, not only can the kid be bored, the kid will also smash the computer, you know, out of frustration. So I mean, it's half of the old Tiger Electronics, you know, one game console things that you bought at Toys R Us, and the other half is a hipster indie game machine. So it feels like it is pointed at people that are, it's pointed within the people that are in that slice of the community that we kind of overlap with, you know.
I mean, what I will say is that I like that if you're an indie designer, I mean, I guess, you know, Bennett Foddy is super well known, Keita Takahashi, like, they're not struggling for recognition, although I guess they are in the grand scheme of things, but
yeah. I mean, it depends on who you ask, I guess.
Right. Like, there are spaces for people to create these boutique things and experiments in indie games in particular. Right. A lot of times, I mean, say what you will about the Crank, but there's not a whole lot of other opportunities to use a Crank in a video game.
We're the only game in town.
Well, I mean, in a very real way, right? Like, look, if you want to fucking get your Crank on, if you want to crank one out, this is the console for you, right? Like, there's not a whole lot of other opportunities there. And so I appreciate that from just like a, you know, like from an artistic perspective, from the perspective of saying, like, we want to live in a brave new world where independent artists can produce niche products for, you know, niche consumers in order to subsidize their wider, you know, the wider mass appeal video games, then this fits within that commerce system, right? Yeah. Where the people who can will pick it up and, I don't know, fucking donate it to a library afterwards or something to make it more accessible. I don't know. I don't know how to solve that particular challenge, but I think it's cool that there's an opportunity for people to design for a console that they wouldn't have otherwise been able to design for. You know, commit a little bit of time and you get this kind of like unique indie artifact.
Yeah, I think that that's exactly the way that I'm looking at it, where this is, you know, it's a game and a physical medium, both making a statement versus just like, I made an indie game and you can play it on your PC, which is the context that you're used to. Like, the context is unique here too, which is what makes it so interesting and charming to look at.
I mean, it kind of reminds me of the way that Jason Rohrer launched some of his games in like these really weird releases where, I don't know if you know if you remember this game, but he launched a game at GDC that was like on a USB drive.
Oh, yeah.
Where like you lived one life and then when you die, you just have to pass the game on. Like, just these weird like physical things where you might never play it, but its existence alone is interesting. It's kind of how I feel about it. And it's a scenario where I don't think, like, I think there is a critical limit on the number of these you could produce anyway. Like, how many Playdate devices could you make before it's no longer cute anymore and it loses its appeal? Which might be, to be fair, might be a critique of it, because then do you really have something on your hand that's is successful or is interesting enough to, like, shouldn't you be able to justify mass production of this thing if there's a demand for it? But I don't know, maybe I think I could hear the argument that no, you know, one and done, we should only get one of these once every decade and then that's it.
Well, I mean, I think if you, in a weird way, if you look at Panic's history, they are very used to this type of scenario where, you know, their software development was on a platform where there's already a limited number of people. They develop software for people that are doing an even more limited thing, which is either developing websites or doing, you know, more arcane file transfer stuff, where it's like they're developing inside of a niche, and they're, and inside of that niche, it's a further niche that they are targeting.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of used to this idea of precision targeting a certain segment of their audience and then just executing on it, which if you just look at their business model, this makes more sense if you abstract it from the hardware, where it's like, oh yeah, these people are used to developing for weirdos and they know what will get weirdos excited, and lo and behold, here it is. You know?
A Pikachu colored console with a crank on it.
It would be interesting if they, because it sounds like they, if this is popular, they will just add more seasons, which will probably turn into some sort of subscription. But it would be interesting to see if, depending on what is the most expensive component of this, like, let's say the screen is the most expensive component, but if they're able to manufacture enough, those costs reduce. What if they make Playdate 2 and it has a different mechanical gimmick?
I mean, that is where I would sign up, right? Like, if every Playdate, like, if it was a Twisted and then a Bop-It, and then, like, fuck, dude, like, if they came out with a console that was like, hey, you can only play this game as long as you could slowly eat a fruit by the foot that we've hidden inside of the console, I would be on board, you know? Like, every game is about candy, and we've just jam-packed this console full of fucking, you know, like, jam strips or whatever of fruit by the foot.
Just don't put it in the sun.
Yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I am down. I'm down for pretty much anything. Like, there's a slew of wacky shit I would be happy to play with. And there are a ton of indie designers that are waiting for the opportunity to design a fucking weird-ass game with weird limitations. Because, man, indie designers, there is no end to the ingenuity that they will bring to a design space.
Yeah. Well, and I think that is an overlooked but cool way of exposing more people to folks like Keita Takahashi, who are well known in some circles, but realistically, like, you know, it's not like more people know you know, Vincent Sampella versus Keita Takahashi just because of the visibility they have. And I think when you make something physical, this is going to be something that is almost an impulse buy for some people. Even, you know, $150 is a lot of money for sure, but it's not as much as, you know, a phone or a Switch or anything. Right. So this is getting towards the impulse buy for people. And all of a sudden people will be playing a game by Bennett Foddy who would have never even come across something from Bennett Foddy in their normal day-to-day life.
Yeah. One would hope.
God help them.
God now help
Bennett
you.
Foddy has a new vector by which to torture us.
I'm always scared I'm going to bump into Bennett Foddy on the street. What does he live in?
And then he'll be like, George, I have a new challenge for you.
Before we wrap up, did you want to talk about some wacky peripherals that this reminds you of? Because the crank is cool. Out of curiosity, if you had to design like a gimmick input device, what would you have in mind?
I don't know. I mean, people are just so creative with some of this stuff. Like I never had a Dreamcast. Did you ever have a Dreamcast?
No.
The Dreamcast, I feel like, had a very strong showing with
weird gimmick shit.
Stuff. Yeah. They had the VMU. Was yep. the what was it? What did it stand for? The virtual memory unit or something? Where you could have your own little virtual pets in there.
Yeah, like a Tamagotchi, you slid into the controller.
Yeah, I mean that always seemed so cool to me. Obviously, the microphone that you use to converse with Seaman.
Yeah. Oh my God. Probably the weirdest thing out of video games. I would say
that. I mean, it's up there for sure. I know the Dreamcast had a fishing controller with with a reel and a crank and everything.
You know what I would put in? I would put in something you had to breathe into. I think the idea of getting your gross bodily fluids on the thing, I find that like, you know, like breathalyzers, you know what I mean? Like what if there was a tube and you had to breathe into it and like that was how you controlled the game? Like it was like breathing mechanics or something.
Oh man. You could easily do that, or it'd be so funny if there was like a platformer. And in order to make the person jump, you had to like
hold
blow gusts of wind up, so you're like,
didn't that exist on the I want to say the Wii, right? Like the tablet had a device that you could. There was a couple of games where you could blow into it, and it would affect the game, right?
There was definitely that on the DS. I remember some of the Zelda games. Oh, that's right.
Yeah, one of the Zelda games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean that stuff. You're right. The having to physically get your gross body oils on a console is always hilarious.
Or like heartbeat sensors. We've seen games that use that, right? Like horror games that use the heartbeat sensor.
Some sort of pulse stuff would be fun. Did you ever play what's it called? Was it Donkey Konga? Was that the one?
Yeah, with the drums.
With the drums.
Fuck yeah, dude. I mean, that is a great one. I actually, because there's a like a rough housingness to that that you just can't do on hardware because you might break it. Everything's so delicate,
right.
You know? That would be my biggest fear. What if the crank falls off? Because I crank it too hard.
My mother was right. I think any of these, it's the other thing that's clever about this is that you have at minimum there will be 12 games to play on this system. Yes. Where if you think about like Donkey Konga, there was probably one or two games that ever used.
When I was doing a cursory glance at like old weird peripherals, the one that struck out to me the most is the Tony Hawk Ride skateboard.
Oh my god,
where they made, man, this is wild because I remember being alive at this moment. This is 2009, you know.
Yeah.
Like you and I, we've graduated college at this point. This was only a decade ago.
We were doing the podcast. Several years into the podcast.
This feels so fucking old and gross and tacky and dumb. Like this is like, I imagine finding this next to like a cassette tape of like Stained or something, you know. Like it is just so bad. A skateboard that you actually have to like grip onto and lean on in order to control your skating game.
Yeah, I mean, it was a time. I was thinking about that the other day as I was shoving something into the deep dark closet that we never go into, and I saw my Wii Fit balance board, and I was like, those were some good times.
Those were the days. I mean, hey, at least you were getting fit there. Like, there was no premise under the Tony Hawk board that, like, you were meant to look cool.
There's no premise meaning that you do look cool. It's not a theory. It's like you're immediately cool.
Exactly. You were meant to be cool. I don't know.
I wonder if I booted up the Wii Fit, if it would, because I remember it would give you guff if you skipped a bunch of days. It'd be like, oh, I haven't seen you for a while.
Yeah, like if you rolled it up and it was like, whoa, Scott, what the fuck? Like,
whoa, Jesus, where Scott, have you been? 7 years, what's going on?
Or what if it was confused? Like, what year is it, Scott? What? When am I?
You ever owned a racing wheel? That's always a classic peripheral.
No, but my cousin had one growing up and it was pretty cool.
I never have owned one myself. The closest I ever got to was I had a Microsoft Sidewinder joystick for the PC back in the day.
Ooh, nice.
It looks very cool. It has
very cool. Just like that skateboard I own.
I mean, it was interesting to use with MechWarrior because the joystick also rotated. So Ooh. You can pivot your chassis as well as go left, right, back, forward. It was kind of meant for like flight sims, basically, because it had like a little throttle thing on it as well.
I mean, there were times where I would have considered a flight sim controller because I like the idea, yeah. Like the one-to-one relationship between what you're experiencing. I mean, outside of the Tony Hawk ride is kind of cool.
Yeah. Yeah. How about have you ever used in real life a Steel Battalion controller?
No, but that is my dream.
Someday.
I mean, I think, again, exactly to that point, there's something exhilarating at the idea of like, oh, I am at the controls of something that is functionally one-to-one. Like,
yeah.
If I were to control a real mecha, these are the controls I would use.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a surprisingly rich history of strange hardware out there.
Oh, yeah.
But very little of it has had 12 games associated with it.
That's true.
Which is already like, all right, they're ahead of the game already, you know.
Did you know that there was a Wu-Tang controller?
What?
Yeah, I'm not even kidding. It was designed.
Did you have to hold it with your hands in a W position somehow?
It is the shape of the Wu-Tang logo itself. I'm serious, and it was meant to play Wu-Tang Shaolin style, the 1999 PlayStation game.
Wait, is it an arcade stick or is it?
It's just a regular controller. But hey, you know what, Scott? It ain't nothing to fuck with.
It's like, do you want an extremely unergonomic, terrible-looking controller?
I mean,
what if I told you ODB drew it on a napkin and we created
dude,
it?
Dude, if that shit was signed, fucking sign me up. Are you kidding me? That would be sweet. I wonder, I bet you there's someone out there, and I hope they listen to this podcast, that collects fucking god-awful peripherals. You know, like there's someone out there who's like, oh yeah, I got that fucking RE4 chainsaw controller, like I'm ready to go.
And then, yeah, and I only hope that they're keeping it in pristine museum condition because it needs to be saved for posterity.
I mean, if anything, this is like a weird testament to the success of the ones that do come to the surface, right? Like the Wii balance board.
Yeah.
Like, that's nuts that that was actually as successful as it was.
Right, right. And it just emboldens Nintendo to continue doing. I mean, one could argue that the Nintendo Switch itself is one huge gimmick, you know, just pulled off very well.
That's true, yeah. That's the secret. Now that you've said that aloud,
gimmicks
like,
out of
doomed.
Cardboard.
Fuck, dude. Yeah, that's a good point. It's a good point.
You have to stare into a bird's butt in order to do a VR experience or whatever.
I mean, hey, they'll experiment, you know? Like, that's great. Isn't the Donkey Kong controllers, like, those are official Nintendo peripherals, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they wouldn't farm that out to any. They wouldn't farm that out to Mad Catz. Come on.
No way.
Yeah, this is cool. I feel like, I mean, you know, I'll admit it. I signed up for the thing. Like, we'll see how I feel, you know, next year or whenever they start shipping it. But the allure of the developers that they have signed on, along with the kind of embrace of quirk that they've shown, it's like, all right, you guys are onto something here.
I mean, and it'll be a different story when we have to open up our wallet.
That is true. But you know, I mean, they're already hyping people up, and I can already feel the allure of something something this silly, you know.
Well, and the moment they say Frog Fractions 3, I'm on board, you know.
The moment they even say, "I wonder who's going to make Frog," it's like they'll have a small reference to it, and you're like, "Oh, the game is afoot."
Yeah, I will say it's exciting, and that there are folks that are not established names or publishers in the game space that are making weird shit. And we talked about how exciting it was around what Annapurna Pictures got into the game publishing game. We of course have Devolver Digital, but like, yo, add another one, and now they're making hardware too. Bring it on. I'm all for it.
It's a nice antidote to how pessimistic I was feeling a few weeks ago when like Google was announcing its thing, where I was like, well, pack it up, boys. We used to play video games, and now the corpse have taken over.
Yep.
And now it's like, okay, this is just opening up. This is opening up new types of experience. Like, people are having to innovate in different ways, which is a more optimistic view of it.
Right. Cranks.
Cranks. Cranks, everyone.
Cranks.
experiencepoints@gmail.com is our email address,
and experiencepoints.net is our website. You can also find us on eBay, where we're selling our Samba de Amigo maracas. Hey, come on.
Never. I'm taking those to the grave. I'm being buried with them like an Egyptian royalty.
Yes. Find us wherever you find podcasts. We are on basically all of those, so come on down.
Cool. All right, thanks everyone for listening. We will talk to you next week.
Ciao.